Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine. Welcome, Tim.
Good evening.
And welcome, Catherine.
Hello, thank you.
Yes, well, it's been a quiet week in Georgia, but then been some national news. But we're going to cover a lot of different things tonight. I'll kind of just preview what's on tap. First up, Antoine Griffin is going to call in just a moment. And from the Obama campaign, he is the state director, and he's going to tell us all about the efforts in Georgia in particular, and if he knows some things about some other southern states, he'll share that too, and how people can get involved and what places they have offices throughout the state. Then later, the caravan on the Unity Tour is heading to Denver. They'll check in live on the road with us in the second half hour. And also, something we just had him put on the blogs, on the blog post, Ellery Gould is going to call in and tell us about this exciting new poll that shows that post-nomination bounce that we've seen in other southern states in the Senate. And then, once again, that Tim is going to get back at with it with the outrage of the week. That's more of us having time for it, not Tim getting back with it, if you will. But big show tonight. And do y'all get the sense, this before Antoine calls in, do y'all get the sense that it was a quiet week in Georgia politics? Catherine?
Yeah, it was quiet. I mean, there was a lot of, I had a couple meetings and stuff, but not a lot of news.
Yes. And Tim?
No, I didn't hear of a whole lot going on. That's odd, too, David, especially when all of these primary matchups are over with and we're ready for the general election campaign. You still ain't hearing a lot out of local candidates.
Yeah, I mean, because there's two phases, if you will. Of course, the folks that had runoffs, this may be, hey, let's get a little vacation in, get our batteries recharged and all before we start the general. And you understand those folks being quiet. But then the folks that have not really had a campaign until now, this was a week they could have really hit the ground running and kicking off. And I think some of your super local races, like, you know, local sheriff, things like that you heard. But the little higher up the chain, some of the congressional battles, maybe the PSC, which didn't have a runoff, you didn't hear as much there. But speaking of that PSC battle, Tim, you were talking about earlier offline, if you are, or on through email, about Karen Handel and this whole ballot battle. Until Antoine calls in, tell us what you know on that.
Well, Karen Handel is claiming that Jim Powell is not a resident of PSC District 4, where he's running. And she seems to be pursuing this pretty hard. He's had to take her to court first to get himself to stay on the primary ballot, and secondly now to stay on the general election ballot. If she is successful in getting him removed, I understand that Bob Indyk would then become the Democratic Party nominee. It's a real mess, and it, as I'm going to say later, it smacks of partisan politics.
It sure does.
Yes, and then I guess the people have already looked at it, and Indyk would be the nominee. But part of me says that I'm not 100% sure that's the case, and it could be that the Democratic Executive Committee could put somebody else in that spot, although that person would be, you know, way behind in campaigning, be it Indyk or another person. And of course, that seems like that could be the driving force behind Karen Handel's motivation. Catherine, any thoughts on that?
I just think it's so obvious that it's partisan. I think she really should be ashamed of herself.
Yes, and once again, this is somebody that, you know, was Miss Good Government coming out of Fulton County. They talked about her, you know, moving up the ladder in the future. And I'm sure the Republican, you know, the hardcore Republicans love it, but then just the average Georgia voter, and we're not talking about the Democrats, we're just talking the average Georgia voter that doesn't like this kind of stuff, that's not going to score her any points long term.
Oh, no, not at all, I don't think.
I mean, Florida, for all intents and purposes, is a Republican state, and we can see where that got Catherine Harris statewide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was just did terribly in her Senate race. She could only win that congressional seat, and it was an overwhelmingly Republican seat. So unless she, I guess she has designs on Tom Price's seat down the road, there may not be as much upside. But I do think the national news, there was more national events going on. One thing, I guess, that we kind of talked about, you know, recurringly, of course, is if Senator Obama is going to pick a VP prior to the convention, it makes sense that it's this week. But beyond it making sense of it being this week, do y'all see any indications we'll know before close of business on Friday? Catherine?
I personally, what I think is going to happen is he's going to wait until that, like, one-day break between the end of the Olympics and the beginning of the convention.
That one day, but that is on the weekend, and the weekend has less eyeballs reading newspapers, watching television news.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I just think that they've probably had this strategy going for a long time.
Yes, Tim,
because
your
right thought. Now everybody's oh, focused on the Olympics, it doesn't seem like he really needs attention right now. He's doing fine. So that's just been my, I mean, I'm, you know, I don't know. That's just my opinion.
Yes. Tim, your thoughts?
Well, yeah, you know, she did mention one thing. The Olympics really have been taking up a lot of air in the room. It might have really just pushed politics off the table all over. For instance, the story with John Edwards, for instance that, it seemed to last for just one news cycle where 6 months ago, and I know he was running then, but it would have been a huge thing for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, but it seemed to get blown away by this wall-to-wall Olympic coverage. And I really think that's what people have got their minds on at the moment.
Yes, and on that story, I mean, we probably need to cover that in its own time. But now, speaking of the Olympic coverage, and another thing we need to cover in its own time, NBC, which is one of the stations they're doing Olympic coverage on, they cut away from Olympic coverage, covered the Saddleback form in its entirety, both candidates. So that is an indication where some politics is pushing through. But one thought, going back to this VP nomination, it says that every night is going to have a theme, and I couldn't tell you what every night is. But I do know that Wednesday night, when the VP nominee is going to speak, the theme is going to be national security. Do y'all feel that tips the hand and closes some people out, like maybe an Evan Bayh that's, you know, known more for domestic experience being governor? Or does that mean nothing? Tim?
I don't think it means much of anything. There's two or three people that know who Barack Obama is going to pick, including Barack Obama. And every time we settle on somebody, it seems that it's someone else. John Kerry's pick was fairly predictable 4 years ago. Al Gore's pick was in left field 8 years ago. A lot of people in 92 could not believe that Bill Clinton picked another Southerner from right next door. And 1988, I don't even want to talk about Dan Quayle. That I think that stunned everyone. I mean, I'm still stunned that he was vice president. But you know, there's just no way of knowing for sure. David, people are saying because this person or that person is speaking at the convention, that disqualifies them. Well, does it? I don't know. I think it could still be any of a dozen people.
It's unconventional to say, hey, Hillary Clinton speaks two nights in a row. It's unconventional to say, hey, he'll wait for the convention. It's unconventional to say he'd pick a governor on foreign policy night, other than maybe someone like a Bill Richardson, and I don't think he's moved way up the list. Catherine, your thoughts on this topic?
I just think it's you know, there's probably, you know, half a dozen people that seem to be all in the, you know, in the list, and I think it's a crapshoot as to who it's going to be at this point. I mean, obviously someone knows or someone has that list narrowed down to three or four, but
that's the sense I get.
I actually think it's kind of exciting, and I think their whole, you know, sign up for the text message or email thing, I think it's really clever, and I think it'll be exciting when it's finally released.
I get the funny feeling, and that it's not about indecision. I think it's the
I don't think it is.
Certain people that he thinks a good fit. I think there's a long list of no's. And I think there is a short list of maybe just two or three people, and he still hadn't decided. I will say this. I don't believe right now Tim Kaine is on that list of on the short list of possible yeses. I get the idea, even though he was the hot name 2 weeks ago, and he's, you know, Southern governor, you know, creates a little few contrasts. I just get the sense he's not on that list. Catherine, what do you think?
I hope he's not on that list.
I know you're not a fan. I don't really. I'm kind of ambivalent about him. I'm not. I could come up with 10 other guys I like better, but then I wouldn't be like. It wouldn't be a Joe Lieberman pick for me, like he was in 2000. Tim, your thoughts?
I think if I were guessing at two people that absolutely are on the short list, the two names that come to mind immediately are Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden.
Yeah, I was I have three: Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, and Wes Clark.
No Evan Bayh for either of you.
No,
I don't think so, and I'll tell you why. Practically speaking, if Evan Bayh is named to the ticket and elected, we lose the senator.
Yeah, and
possibly, yeah.
And do we really want to focus that much on the Midwest? You know,
well,
Illinois. I don't know.
There are a lot of good battlegrounds, and as far as like underpinning the theme, I think he does that real well. He has two young children just like Barack Obama. I think people would see this black family and this white family, and people would come up with all of these similarities. And wouldn't that be a positive thing for America?
Well, the one thing that worries me about Evan Bayh is I think one important part of the selection is going to be someone who's like can be a dynamic and energetic and enthusiastic campaigner. And I don't think Senator Bayh is that.
He certainly is not. He's fairly colorless, to be honest.
Yeah, he's pretty dull.
But
I mean,
wasn't Al Gore supposed to be dull?
But he isn't. I mean,
he's not. I don't
Evan Bayh is supposed to be, and he is.
Well, I haven't seen a lot of Evan Bayh. I just know that. I mean, I think he's better than advertised. And what I mean, like, there are different people you hear just like so dynamic, and I don't get it. I mean, like, I think Mark Warner's great, but then I don't think there's. I don't get the magic other people get as far as like, oh, he's the most dynamic person ever. I don't get that yet.
Yeah,
but, and obviously he's not I think that's, once again, they want that Senate seat. Barack Obama definitely ought to look at figuring how to, you know, get 260 and hope that pick does not mess up getting to 60.
Because he knows how important that's going to be for him to accomplish what he wants to accomplish.
Yes.
I mean, that's really going to be essential.
And of course, I mean, he doesn't necessarily have to get to 60 if certain Republicans, like let's say a Susan Collins, goes back to the Senate but is a little scared and still wants to be a little bipartisan. I mean, somebody, you can have 59 in her. For instance, as crazy as it may sound, you make it even in some issues, John McCain may actually switch over and vote with the Democrats on certain things. And not play the he's not going to be a hard partisan like McConnell.
I would have said that before, but I don't know if he's going to be so amenable if he
could. He could be star grapes. You're absolutely right. I feel he's somebody that would be somebody that's going to work with people more than, you know, Saxby Chambliss, Lindsey Graham, you know, some of the other folks in here.
Oh, yeah.
That we've got, you know, that just follow whatever the Republican Party's marching orders. Although I will say, I think the Republican Party's going to have A, soul searching, and B, just a real reevaluation of who they are when they don't have Karl Rove, the Bush administration, Dick Cheney, whoever's pulling the strings at this moment, because Tom DeLay, he's gone, whomever's pulling the strings up there and telling a lot of those guys that aren't real strong personalities, and we could spend the rest of the show naming that list off, you know, somebody's telling those guys how to vote, and then who's going to fill that void when the Bush administration and a lot of the folks there are gone? You know, who's going to be the alpha male, female there to fill that up?
That is a good question that, you know, I'd be just peachy happy if they didn't come up with an answer.
Yeah, I mean, that's why, like, I think if McConnell gets defeated in Kentucky, and, I mean, probably odds are he wins, but it's close enough. It's another state in the South where we could take that Senate seat. He's somebody that could step up and be that person, so I hope we defeat him, because then they would lose that as a possibility.
Yeah, well, they're really struggling. Their leadership is really struggling.
Yes. So that's just another, you know, interesting aside. Then I guess one of the big political events, because, for instance, one candidate, Barack Obama, was on vacation, there wasn't as much presidential stuff, but then the Saddleback Forum happened last night. I did not see the entire thing. I've seen pieces. Tim, I believe you watched most, if not all. Catherine, did you see much of it? Tim, what did you see on there?
Yeah, I watched the whole thing, David. I thought both of them did well. Honestly, I've got to say John McCain did a better job. His answers were more direct. He spoke to the crowd and to the television audience, whereas Senator Obama seemed to engage in more of a conversation type thing with the pastor. I think even if you did not agree with John McCain's answers, you understood them. They were that direct, sometimes as little as three or four words. Each candidate, I think, made a gaffe that the other one can use in their commercials. I think, obviously, the Republicans are going to beat Senator Obama up about his answers on abortion. And I think Senator McCain's answer about who's rich, you know, they asked for a number, and he said if you make $5 million a year, you're rich. So, hey, if you only make $3 million a year, you're not. Did you know that?
That's a number for some kind of
economist. That's a commercial weight. That's a commercial waiting to happen right there. But otherwise, I don't think either candidate really helped or hurt themselves, and I rather enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
Yes, and I guess the big winner in this whole thing to me is Senator Obama. You know, you look at your usual suspects, your Jerry Falwells, your Focus on the Family guy. What's it? James Dobson. Those kind of folks, they just are never even going to have a Democrat. I mean, that shows the difference in a guy like Rick Warren. I mean, he's a much better representative of Christianity. I mean, he's going to have both candidates, and there's things that he's going to agree with both candidates on, things he's going to disagree. But then it's like, okay, Rick Warren says Senator Obama is good enough to speak and put on an equal footing for our vote in his church. That's going to send a strong message to a lot of more religious voters. That, look, we can then look at both of these guys and not just vote reflexively, but vote on, you know, look at all issues, not necessarily agree with Senator Obama on all of them. And that's going to help him pick up a lot of votes, I think, and therefore McCain was the real loser there.
I agree with you.
I think there's more votes available to Senator Obama. The polling is showing that McCain is running over 10 points behind where President Bush was with the evangelicals.
Yes, I mean, and it's, I guess, I mean, you brought up some good, on the abortion, you said that's going to hurt him, but he did talk about how he wants to reduce the number of abortions, reduce the number of teenage pregnant, or unwanted, I think it's unwanted, not teenage, unwanted pregnancies and things like that. So even though he'd said, you know, I'm not going to change my position on choice, I'm going to look for solutions and people can work together on that. And, I mean, I'm sure he's not the first politician to say that, but still he's the first politician to go to a church that size and that kind of form and get to say that.
Well,
so I thought
I
it was a good night for Obama in that.
I think the choice people appreciate that he didn't just sort of cave.
Well, there's no way you can cave in the 24-hour internet news cycle.
People do it all the time.
But it never works. I mean,
well, it doesn't work.
You get
but
found
they
out.
Do it. They do it to get that sound bite, and then they, you know, back up on it. I'm not saying he.
And
does,
then you get that sound bite, and then it just doesn't work. I mean, you.
Right.
You
so
can,
I think I appreciate his courage and willingness to, you know, get out there and say what he believes. I think that's good.
Yes. Now, Tim, I didn't watch the whole thing. Did Jeremiah Wright come up any in the
no,
form?
No, that was never mentioned.
Okay.
That was not mentioned.
And I'll be honest. I mean, I find the fact that he attacked another person on Christmas Sunday, I mean, when he attacked Hillary Clinton, I mean, that's just not what a pulpit's about. And, I think it would have been very fair for that to be brought up. I mean, not that it's – I mean, just to bring it up, and then, of course, Senator Obama could have denounced it. Which he already has. I'm surprised it didn't get brought up.
What Pastor Warren did was he asked both of them the same exact questions.
Oh, okay.
And that way you were able to draw a perfect contrast between the two. That's why, even though it wasn't a debate, I think that anyone who watched that last night, if they can do no more then base their vote this year on that one forum, that they wouldn't be doing a bad thing because you got a clear picture of who each candidate is and where they want to lead this country. For instance, the answers about the Supreme Court. They were asked, who would you not have appointed? And immediately, Obama said Clarence Thomas. First, right out of the gate. And, of course, when Senator McCain's turn came, he mentioned some of the liberal members of the court, like Stevens. So you see what they're going to do when they become president. And I've really enjoyed that thing. It's one of the best things I've ever seen.
Yeah. Questard mentioned that they sequestered people you know, the other candidate that was, you know, I guess Senator McCain went second. He was sequestered in a room where he had
He
no,
was. He
no,
was. He was,
did they,
he was in a room where he couldn't hear.
Did they show a little cutaway? What was the game show where they would ask one candidate, you know, one person, one contestant, they'd ask the other. And the one contestant that was off stage had, like, big earphones on, and they were just, like, looking around like they had been dropped in space. Did they do any of those cutaways, Tim?
No, they did do some commercials now, you know, that they were sitting there talking and he you know, said, we'll be right back. It was pretty cut and dry that way. Both candidates got equally nice ovations. A really nice moment was when Senator Obama finished and before Pastor Warren let him leave the stage, he went ahead and introduced Senator McCain, and they were on the stage, you know, shaking hands and all that. That was a really nice moment. It was a very civil thing, very well handled.
Yeah.
I'm really surprised at how well handled it was. It was handled well.
In the makeup of the audience, did they tell, was it church members got first preference,
well,
or was it like anybody?
I saw party people and family members sprinkled around through the thing. I remember clearly seeing Lindsey Graham sitting there. I know both spouses were there. I think they had some of both. Who?
Brownback.
Yeah, he was there. But it was, you know, sprinkled that way.
Sure.
It's a huge place.
Yes. Well, if you did call in to hear Obama's Georgia representative, yet to get that call in, if we get it, we'll take it. But we do have more guests coming up, so that'll be exciting. I guess since we're talking about the convention, Senator Obama, it fits together. We've just found out, I'm going to post more details on Tawny's Tavern. I'm sure we'll be posted other places. During convention week, we'll have our Sunday night show like normal next Sunday, and then Monday through Thursday, every night of the convention, we'll go ahead and have a 6:30 to 7, I'm sorry, 6 to 6:30 half-hour show Every night it'll be on our channel, or on our show and the Heading Left channel, and it'll be there, and we're going to have coverage live from Denver. Now, Tim, Catherine, and I aren't going to Denver, but that's good because then we can run the board from here. But then we're going to have folks like Bernita Smith, Wendy Davis, John Flack, and others have all committed to saying that they'll come on, tell us exactly what's going on with the Georgia delegation, what we're not seeing on TV, which is going to be real insightful because, I mean, of course, we can all look at CNN, MSNBC, and see that coverage, but then what are we not seeing that goes on that's really just a whole another event within itself? So that's going to be coming up, not this coming week, but 8 days from now it'll start. So we're just real pleased we could do that. But, yeah, there's – and I guess looking at some other southern states, there's been some polls to come out in the Robin Hayes-Larry Kissel race. This is another case where you have Buell and Paul. Well, actually, it's a little better than Buell and Paul's. You have a poll that Hayes, the incumbent, put out, the Republican incumbent, that shows him 10 points up. But then you have a public policy poll, an independent poll, that shows the race at about 3 points. With Robin Hayes only at 43%. That was posted on Swing State Project, among others. Did either one of y'all see that poll?
No. I did not.
Yes, I will admit I did not do as good a job getting my show notes out to my people today. It's just been pretty busy around my household. But it was real interesting. It was, you know, one has a 10-point and one has – well, actually, it was 43-36. That independent poll was still well under that 50. And this is one of those, another southern take-back district. I think the district, its makeup is a lot like the one that Heath Shuler took back last time. So interesting that poll came out. But I've been looking around. A lot of other southern states are very quiet. You know, one of the few things that did happen was the Jim Martin poll, which Ellery will come on and we'll discuss that at that time. Some of the I do know Doug Heckman had pointed out, he came out with a press release this week that talked about John Linder, who was first elected to the House in 1992, had a how long was the term limit pledged? Do either one of y'all recall
two
right
terms.
Offhand? Two terms?
Two terms.
Two terms. My goodness, that's long ago. He broke that in 96. And so he you know, took him to task, and, you know, a lot of candidates have run against John Linder and not brought that up, but it got brought up. How much impact do you think that'll be, Catherine?
Oh, it probably won't have much impact. That's so inside baseball.
Yeah.
But if they make if they have the money and time to, you know, make a big deal out of it, I think it is something that people, not so much that people want term limits, but they want a representative who sticks to their word.
Yeah, I mean that's. I mean I don't know about y'all, but I'm just not a big term limit person at all.
Yeah, me
because
either.
I mean, we got the ballot box. We can vote.
Yeah,
for blood
exactly. That's
along.
What I always say. Right.
But I will say now I do kind of think it's interesting when people have like, you know, I'll leave Congress if X doesn't happen, and they have a goal. Like I know Kent Conrad, his was based on, you know, reducing the deficit. And, like, he had already said he wouldn't run again. And a lot of people, they had all these people urging him. They had polls. And then he went ahead and ran again. He said, okay, I'll serve another term. And if nothing happens. And then, of course, that was during the Clinton administration. And lots happened with the deficit. And that was a kind of an interesting angle on the, you know, the not really term limits, but trying to say, hey, I'm going to get something done.
Yeah, I don't think people – I think people like it – I mean, if you're going to run on an issue and then you fail to follow through on what you ran on, I think that – it bothers me, even when I was less – even if I'm not as involved as I am. I just think that you want them to be straightforward and honest, and when they don't do it, you know, I just think it's the kind of thing that makes people mad.
Yes. But I do think it's a, you know, it's kind of an interesting angle. I mean, when you're running against these incumbents, you got to do what you can. My hope is that there'll be so many new voters because I don't know if y'all saw in the paper, like for instance, Gwinnett County, which is the core of that district, it is rapidly changing. And if all those, you know, not all those folks, but a lot of those folks register and vote for the first time, the Democratic performance is going to just skyrocket. And that,
well, you know,
county,
David, that reminds me of something that I just would like, if I can just take a minute to say about that. We learned this week at the Fulton County Democrats that the metro counties are very concerned about Election Day because there is this huge influx of new voters. So we're going to start a campaign, and we're hoping that, you know, all the metro counties and other counties as well will really begin to encourage people to take advantage of advanced voting and vote by mail so that we can – so all of us, you know, diehard party loyalists and regular voters can sort of clear the decks so all these new voters don't have to wait in line at the polls on Election Day. I think it's going to become a big issue, and I'm hoping that we can really get that message out, especially to our, you know, good Democratic – good voters, the people who always vote.
Yeah, so, Tim, I believe you pretty much always vote early. Is that correct?
I vote the very first day of early voting. And I was going to mention something about that. Those, I don't know if you saw the weasels on the Georgia gang this morning, but I believe it was Kent that mentioned that early voting definitely helps the Republicans. And that sort of threw me back a little bit. I had never heard that before. Y'all?
I've never heard that. I don't think it's true.
Well, I've heard that, you know, when you, it gives more access. I know absentee Republicans have used that better, but early voting in other states, it certainly has helped Democrats in elections. Now, if you looked at the last 2 to 3 cycles, you know, 2002, 2004, 2006, then sure, you could say that because Republicans have done well in Georgia. That's not because of early voting or regular voting or absentee voting. That's just because they've done better in Georgia the last 3 cycles. But maybe, hey, here's the good news. If we know it's better for Democrats and people like Kent think it's better for Republicans, then maybe we'll get what we want and get more and more of it. We can start voting in libraries and shopping malls and all kinds of places. Because I know, I don't know about y'all's area, but for instance, this year in Floyd County for the presidential primary, they started it. You could not only vote in the rather inconvenient voter registration office in Floyd County, you could also vote in the Civic Center, which is a much more centrally located, better parking, wide open space. So they had a second location. This is the first time they had done that in Floyd. Catherine, how many locations does Fulton now have?
Fulton has 4 locations now. They used to only have 2. I think they have 4. They might have 6.
So apparently it's not like they're doubling the numbers.
The thing that I would like to see is at least on one day during that advanced voting week that they extend the hours because now it's only until 5 o'clock.
Well, in Floyd County, they went to 7.
Yeah,
I voted about 6:30 on the presidential primary.
Yeah, I think that would make a big difference.
Oh, it did, and it was, so Floyd's ahead of the curve then. Tim, how many locations does Somerville have?
Just 1, the courthouse, but you got to remember here that 43% of the registered voters in this county vote in the Somerville precinct, so it works out real well, and we generally have very good crowds. And up here, for some reason, both early voting and absentee ballots always favor the incumbents.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, which I think is an odd thing, but it always happens that way. I'm not sure what that says about the voter breakdown in each of those events, but that's what always happens here. And I was just wondering if that happens in other counties.
I don't know, but Lisa Ellery Gould, I believe, has just called in, and we're ready to talk about this poll that we've been alluding to for part of the show. Ellery, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here and glad to be able to report such great news.
Yes, and we haven't even given any numbers. We're saving all the excitement
for
yourself.
Well, let me. It would be my pleasure. We took a poll, and we are in pretty great shape and probably are surprising a lot of people with this. The poll shows Saxby Chambliss at only 42% and Jim Martin only 6 points behind.
Yes. Where was Saxby Chambliss at on that 50% number that's so critical?
Sure. I mean, you know, any time you have an incumbent below 50%, he's in trouble. Now he's not just below 50%, he's well below, with only 42% of the vote. And that's a pretty low ceiling for a guy who, you know, has been allegedly working for Georgians for 6 years.
Yes. Well, I know you put out the Melman group who did the poll put out a pretty extensive polling memo. Part of it's in the release, and then part of it you can actually go on and you can see the margin of error, the number of voters surveyed. But
sure.
But tell us this, as far as, like, issues, what issues does it look like are moving Georgians away from Saxby-Chambliss from 2006 to this year?
Well, you know, I think it's the kind of stuff that you hear people talking about just when you're in the grocery store and buying gas and all that. It's economic issues. People are really, really concerned the way this economy has moved, and they don't feel Saxby-Chambliss has done anything to help them. They're seeing their bills go up and their incomes not being able to keep pace. And they're seeing their neighbors' homes getting foreclosed on, and they're starting to realize that these economic policies of the last few years have really done them no favors, and they're ready for change. And I think that's part of the reason that Jim is doing so strong. You know, what's great about this poll is that you know, Jim's in a really great spot, being only 6 points behind, and we still have yet to introduce him to a lot of voters. Probably about half of the voters in November don't even know who Jim is yet, and he's still already pulling 36%. So there's a real room for growth here, and we're excited about it. And you know, it's not just exciting internally and watching the folks here who know this campaign and been a part of it get riled up. We're turning some heads, some folks who probably didn't think that we could be this close. I mean, if you look at some recent polling in other states, in other races that are supposed to be competitive and supposed to be on the map, we're actually doing better than a lot of those. I mean, if you look at Oregon or North Carolina or Maine or Kentucky, you know, we got the Republican incumbent at a lower level than in those states, and the Democratic challenger closer behind. So it's a real race, and I think a lot of people are probably surprised by that.
Yes. Well, Tim, any questions?
Yeah, I do have one. Did cross tabs in the poll show why there was such a high number of undecideds?
Well, I don't have it in front of me, but you know, it's probably because they have yet to see some familiarity with Jim, and that's going to be our challenge. But I think it's one that we can meet. The fact that they are not with Saxby and they know him better, but are still undecided, it means that they're not really satisfied with him, and they're looking for some other place to go. And we gotta give them the option. We gotta explain what the real choice is for them. And I think we can do that, because I think that as we saw, you know, in essentially we're running a fairly similar message than we were running in the primary, which of in terms of what Jim wants to do when he gets to Washington, which is to make turn this economy around and make it work for average middle class folks. And I think once that message gets out, that you'll see that undecided number go down and move toward Jim, because they know the alternative. They know Saxby, and they don't want to go there.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Catherine, a quick question for Ellery.
Well, yeah, I just wonder. I know it's very recent, but have you seen any uptick in contributions because of this poll? Because I know the money game is going to be
sure.
Really important as we move forward in this election.
We have a lot of folks who you know, it comes in sort of two different forms. There's the group of folks who hadn't given before and are now hearing about it, and they're excited and starting to give. And then some of our previous givers who may have you know, sort of giving out of obligation, thinking, well, he's the Democratic candidate, I'll support him, and he's fighting the good fight, and you know, maybe pushing boulders up a hill. But now they're looking at this and saying, wow, this thing is real, and I can do something to support Jim by donating again. And so we're seeing that as well. And you know, I think I talked about this the last time I was on, that the amount of grassroots support that we're seeing, even before this poll, is really, really exciting. I think we've got over 6,000 donors now.
Yes. Well, I'm going to leave you with a question you're going to like. if someone sees this poll before, they said, oh, Chambliss is over 50, it's, you know, 15-point lead, but now they're excited, they want to get involved or to donate, what's the best way to do that?
Our website is a great way to do it. It's www.martinforsenate.com. And you can sign up there to volunteer. You can learn more about Jim. The poll is on there, including a pretty detailed memo talking about I was talking about all those folks who don't know Jim, but among the voters who know both candidates, Jim's leading by 15 points. I gathered just from the last few minutes before I called in that Antoine wasn't able to call in. But among those voters who are newly registered to vote, and I know that's something that Antoine's been working on is registering new voters, Jim also leads Chambliss by 17 points. So all those efforts from the Obama campaign to really pump up registration and tap into this huge block of folks who are ready to get involved and excited for change, we reap the benefits off that as well. So it's really a great effort that they've got going on there, and it's really going to help us.
Yes,
so,
well, Ellery, thanks for coming on and sharing such exciting news with us again.
Well, thanks, and always appreciate the opportunity. And, again, it's www.martinforsenate.com.
Okay, well, next
thanks,
time
y'all.
You have good news, call on in.
All right, appreciate it.
Thank you.
And it looks like that we've gotten two calls, probably on the road to Denver. welcome, Caravan. Catherine, go ahead with this.
Hey, who is it?
Hey, it's Angela and Bernita.
Hey, how are you guys doing? Where are you?
We are just south of Andalusia, Alabama, on our way into Mobile.
Okay. For our listeners who don't know what you're doing, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're doing?
We are on board the Unity Express, which is an RV, and we are going across country, not directly to Denver, but in a kind of circuitous route across the southeast and southwest to register voters and participate in the Young Democrats of Georgia's Pledge to Vote program, and then have some fun, of course, along the way and visit relatives, see historic sites, and everything like that. So we're just sort of going across, taking 6 days to get to Denver. Four of us on the RV are delegates. And the other two are very active political activists. And that's what the whole trip's about.
And how many miles do you expect to go? Have you figured that
out?
How many miles are you going to be driving?
Oh, 3,000 miles is our estimate.
Wow.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. Almost sounds like a song. I don't know.
And have you had any, adventures yet that you want to tell us about, or has it been pretty straightforward so far?
I think the funniest moment was we were all sitting around here and talking, and Mark had dozed off and woke up just when he heard Bernita talking about this game where you crash cars. And so she's talking about the crash. She said, oh, yeah, the object is to crash cars. And we got, no, you got to crash as much as possible. And he's like, I hope you're talking about a game. Because I was right when he woke up, was right when she was talking about that. But, yeah, no, we went to Talladega Super Speedway and saw that. It was pretty empty, but it was that was pretty cool. So we got some pictures. And then we stopped by Nakima's mom's house, and they had this whole barbecue buffet pretty much laid out, and so we got to hang out there for a little bit, and then just got on the road.
Great. And there were about, how many people, we were all at Manual for our listeners, we were all at Manual to send them off this morning, and there was a room full of people at Manual's. I was surprised. I was expecting, you know, a dozen people or so. I think there must have been about 40 people.
That's what we were estimating, was about 40, 45 people, yeah.
And they got some more additional donations. And anyone out there who feels like they want to help these young people moving across the country, you can still donate at, what is it? Give us the website, Angela.
It's theunityexpress.com.
They're doing this out of the goodness of their heart, and they're having a good time, but they're going to be registering voters and spreading the Democratic message across the country.
Yeah.
Yes, well, have a safe travel to Denver, and, of course, Bernita, I know you're planning on helping us out with our convention coverage because we had talked about that previously, so we'll look to hear some reports. And, Angela, you know, don't be a stranger either because we want anybody that's in with the Georgia delegation or even some other southern delegations to give us news for what we can't see on the cameras in Denver.
Every night at 6 o'clock during the convention.
Every night at 6?
Yep.
6 Eastern, not 6 Mountain.
Okay.
Yeah. So
which would be
before
5
it's
our time?
Good. Before everything
okay.
gets good out there in Denver. But having the benefit of going to Boston, I know when it's early and when it's really cooking. So I tried to pick a better time for y'all. Yeah. But that sounds exciting. What's the next best stop y'all have got coming up between now and Denver?
I think the next biggest stop that's going to be it's going to be tomorrow when we're going to be doing it's pretty much Civil Rights Day. We're going to be leaving Mobile. That's our destination tonight. That's where we're staying over. And in the morning we're heading up to Selma, and we're going to take the highway that from Montgomery to Selma that they were marching on to Montgomery, and we're going to walk across the Edmund Pettus Bridge and go to the National Voting Rights Museum, and then from there we're going to head to Jackson.
Well, that sounds great.
Hello?
Thanks again for calling in for us.
Thanks, guys. Be careful.
Okay.
Yes. Well,
can you hear me?
Barely. Bernita, you still there with us?
Yes. Well, what we're going to do on Tuesday is actually go pay respect to the Arkansas Democratic Party.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
And then we'll go to the Presidential Library and then travel all the way down to Dallas where we'll hang out with a bunch of YG.
Yeah. Full itinerary. Well, Bernita, I guess we have a little bit of time, and since you're such a friend of the show that have been on with us many times and worked for Hillary Clinton, what are your thoughts on Hillary Clinton speaking the night before the VP is announced, but then Simple still thinks that she could speak twice? Any kind of insider thoughts there?
Well, I think the most appropriate thing is for her to speak on women's suffrage day. Because she's moved the ball forward a lot in this campaign. So it's really appropriate for her to speak on that day. And I don't really look at it if she's speaking on that Tuesday that she can't speak on VP night. That could just be, you know, a runner-up for her.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be good. I mean, who knows? This VP stakes is, you know, who's going to end up with it. I just hope we don't have to trot out somebody new, that we have to teach America who they are again, because we already got one. It's going to be a really hard sell.
Yes, I mean, we had no consensus when we discussed this earlier on who we think it'll be.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're excited. I mean, I think, you know, all the delegates are going to be happy. Because we got the roll call nomination, and at the end of the day, we're all going to end up being Democrats. I mean, one big happy family again.
Oh, certainly. Well, have a safe travels throughout the country, and we'll talk to you then convention week.
Okay.
Sounds
we'll
great.
Talk to you convention.
Yes. Okay.
All right.
Thanks
for calling in.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye, Bernita.
Yes. Well, Tim, go ahead with the outrage of the week.
Okay, David, we alluded to this earlier. Our old friend Bill Shipp wrote a rather interesting column this week. He was talking about how the Secretary of State's office is operating under the leadership of Karen Handel. Now, I think back to past Secretaries of State and how they managed the office. Kathy Cox, who we know and love, was an innovative, remarkable public servant. She introduced the new electronic voting system now in place, for instance. Before her, Lewis Massey, who really was her mentor, was one of the young guns of Georgia politics in the 1990s. And I still wish, if he's listening tonight, here's a hint, that he'd return to run for public office again because he has so much to offer. Of course, our old friend Max Cleland served in this office for 14 years with honor and distinction, with no stain attached to his record. And in my youth, before your time, David, the legendary Ben Fortson occupied the office for a term of 33 years. He was a brilliant man, a riveting public speaker for those that heard him, and a wonderful public servant. And now we have our first Republican in the office, Karen Handel. And wouldn't you just know that she has politicized her office? In her mind, the right way to run her office is to use its influence to enlarge the Republican majorities at all levels of government in this state. It's very obvious what she's up to. She doesn't even try to hide it. She doesn't care how it looks to people who follow politics, because she thinks that the average voter in Georgia either doesn't notice or simply doesn't care. Look at what she's doing to Jim Powell, for instance. We talked about this earlier. She's trying to kick the Democratic nominee off the ballot. She claims that his residence is outside the PSC District 4 seat that he is seeking, even though the administrative law judge that she appointed to look into this told her that she was wrong. If she gets her way, Bob Indeck, who got only 15% of the vote in the primary, would be the Democratic nominee, and the 343,000 voters who chose Jim Powell would be disenfranchised. But she doesn't care, because one of the best Democratic candidates for the PSC in years would be out, and the GOP would win the seat. And that's exactly what she wants. I'll tell you something else that she wants. She wants to make a quick name for herself. She wants to be a governor or a senator. And I think she is engaging in this shameless political partisan wrangling in order to ingratiate herself to the GOP leadership and voters in this state. She kind of reminds me of another Secretary of State that you mentioned, David, one by the name of Catherine Harris. Catherine Harris thought that she could parlay her partisanship into a Senate seat. Didn't work out for her, though. I don't think it'll work out for Karen Handel either, because at the end of the day, she also needs to exhibit some talent for the real judges. By that, I mean the voters. And she doesn't have what it takes. All she shows me, at least at this point, is that she's a party hack. But in the meantime, she betrays the real purpose of her office, and she shortchanges the people of Georgia. All she knows is how to attack. But like most Republicans under the gold dome lately, she doesn't know how to run the state, David.
Yes. Well, thanks, Tim, for – I'm glad we got back to the outrage of the week. And true words again. I guess a topic that's not statewide, but it's certainly because it's the capital of the state and the biggest city in Georgia, a mayor of Atlanta, there was a little news in that race. City Council President Lisa Borders decided not to run for the mayor of Atlanta. Catherine, you being a Fulton County resident, Atlanta City resident as well?
Yes.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I have to say I hadn't really picked a candidate in that race yet, but I'm a little bit disappointed because I think she would have been a good candidate. But I have a lot of admiration for her decision and the reasons for her decision. I can really relate. I'm in a very similar circumstance. She publicly stated that it was because her parents' health is declining and they need her attention. And I think that there's a lot of people that are of that age that are facing the same kind of things. And I think it was very kind of brave and courageous of her to step up and say that was the reason, and I think she is intending to run again for city council president. I'm sure she will be reelected. She's very, very well respected, I believe. So I guess it means that we've got Mary Norwood, Kasim Reed, and Caesar Mitchell, it looks like. The one thing is that the other name that has come back up now because it had kind of disappeared was this whole idea of Clark Howard running for mayor.
Wow.
But, yeah, they've talked about that on and off for the last year and a half or so. But my thoughts go out to Lisa Borders. I can completely relate to the circumstances of her decision, and I hope that all goes well with her family.
Can I jump in with a question, Catherine?
Uh-huh.
Does that – she obviously would have been a favorite to win this race. Does that now mean that the race for mayor in Atlanta is wide open?
Well, I really think that the two favorites in that race up until now have been Kasim Reed, State Senator Kasim Reed, and Lisa Borders, with Mary Norwood, you know, building some support around the city. I don't know that it leaves it wide open. I think it puts a lot of pressure on State Senator Reed to really step up his campaign and really start to work on, you know, building his constituency and building the support that he'll need to win.
Yeah, I think Kasim Reed, I kind of thought he was the front runner. I mean, given that he ran Shirley Franklin's campaign, I mean, he knows how to get it done on a campaign level. And then, I mean, he's pretty much known as a good government state senator. It's not like he's at all controversial. I mean, he's kind of a get-things-done kind of guy that can work across the aisle, and also that's going to help you with fundraising. And I believe his fundraising was pretty strong already.
Yeah, they both had very strong fundraising and very strong support. I mean, I think it was really thought to be kind of a horse race between the two of them.
I think if you look at and I think there's a Jesse Spikes involved, but I think let's go back a week ago. I think if you have Lisa Borders, Mary Norwood, and Kasim Reed, you basically, Kasim Reed's the one candidate that probably people are comfortable with in the boardroom and on the streets, whereas the other candidates, they probably are all pretty comfortable with him in the boardroom. In the streets, maybe not quite as good a fit, whereas he, and then, of course, you're probably going to get that candidate that's probably only comfortable in the streets, and the people in the boardroom aren't comfortable with him either. That made a nice
thing about the two, I mean, if we're just going to talk about Kasim Reed and Lisa Borders for a minute, Lisa Borders is a very dynamic campaigner. She's very energetic. She's very well-spoken. She's very enthusiastic. And State Senator Kasim Reed is a little bit of a quieter candidate. He's not quite as dynamic a speaker. Well, I should say he's a good dynamic speaker, but one-on-one he's a little I don't want to say. I mean, it's not bad. He's just not quite as energetic and quite as magnetic.
Well, let me ask you this, Catherine. Is he as dynamic as Evan Bayh?
Yes.
Let me jump in.
Evan Bayh, we'll see where that got Evan Bayh. Two terms as governor and now working on two terms as senator. So, I mean,
well, but Evan Bayh had a little leg up with his from his father.
Let me throw in a monkey wrench, if I may. What would happen if Clark Coward entered the race?
Well, I think that he would probably get a big bump at first, but then when people started, you know, investigating the things that are really required to be a mayor, it's not just, you know, how to save money on a plane ticket to Florida. You know, I mean, I love Clark Howard. I listen to him sometimes, but he doesn't have the executive experience and the you know, public service experience that you really need. I mean, the mayor of Atlanta is a big job.
And I
it requires a lot of diplomacy and a lot of, you know, a lot of management and executive experience.
Well, and I get the sense the people that are the most excited about Clark Howard's campaign are the kind of folks that are metro Atlantans, that while they call themselves Atlantans, because they are truly, you know, metro Atlantans, they don't actually live in the city limits, and therefore they have no say at the ballot box in this race.
I think you're probably right about that.
Good. Well, another great show, and then next week is going to be the convention. So, you know, no matter what we have for, who we have for guests, we're going to have topics because it's the Olympics, the Super Bowl of Democratic politics, the DNC convention, and we can start previewing that coverage and go all kinds of directions. And maybe we won't have as quiet a week on the local front here in the South. But had a good night, Tim. Catherine?
Good night, sir.
Thank you very much.
See y'all next
good night.
Week.